I have hit the record button. It is now, the numbers are moving, the little bars are going up and down. I think we are recording our next episode of Intriguing Creativity.
Yes, we are here, speaking.
And that voice you're hearing speaking is?
Steve Smolinski.
And the one you just heard me saying that, talking about the guy that's on the other end of the line, this is Tom Trimbeth on this end of the line. And of course, as far as you're concerned, we're both on the other end of the line, because you're listening to a podcast. You don't see either one of us.
Yes. And lucky you are that you don't see either one of us.
You're here. I have some... I used to have hair that was curly enough that I knew women... This is really weird. This has really happened. They would drive 30 miles... to run their fingers through my hair, then date my friends, mind you, because my hair was so soft and curly and all that kind of thing. And now I have these days where it just looks scruffy, like nothing else.
Interesting.
Yes, well, you know, when we were teenagers, we all had these special things that were going on, right?
Yes, well, I remember the era when I had hair coming down my back that was so long that I kept it in a very long, big, heavy ponytail all the time.
And now we have more hair coming out the front of our faces than off the top of our faces.
Yes, and then yes, and my mother got to the point where she was really freaked out that I just went everywhere with this huge thing hanging down my back. And so finally I did something, and I decided that I was doing some business stuff and it would be better to not have a huge ponytail coming down my back. And I had it all tied up. I got somebody who really knew how to tie it really well.
Yeah.
Who tied it up in this beautiful ponytail and everything.
Yeah.
And then I tied the end, which was coming out of my head. And then I cut the whole thing off, and I sent it to her as a present. She was exceedingly happy and excited to get that as a present. She thanked me greatly for having gotten it together and sent it to her.
The gifts you can give. And just I started off with this odd story, this too much information story about the curly hair and things like that, the reason they drove 30 miles, because there was 29 miles of nothing between our two schools. And our school had four times as many men as women, and their school had 20 times as many women as men.
Oh.
So it was one of the only ways to get a date, was to go drive 3 hours. And
so you were sort of in the dating, you were in the place which was a heavy duty dating line of transportation.
And we should get on to the regular, you know, current event topics, but I'll just pass along this one. The thing I thought was funny was there were nine of us. There was five guys and four women.
Mm-hmm.
Five guys, four women. Think about it. That's four couples, one plus one janitor. guess who was the bartender?
Well,
but in the meantime, to bring it up to 2024.
Yes.
For those of you who weren't privy to what we were talking about before then, which was actually more pertinent, both of us have just been going through changing passwords on accounts because... Now we have to manage passwords, and I don't know about you. I mean, I got the Google sends up the little message saying, "Hey, your account's been breached."
Yeah.
And this is taken as an innocuous thing by a lot of folks. Oh, your password was hacked. I've got like four dozen passwords. It is non-trivial to go through and say, "Oh dear, okay, so which ones had this password?" Because I don't have all the same password in all of them, but there's. I don't know about you, but it's. I don't know that it's getting better, and I also am trying to think what's it going to be like for 5 or 10 years from now. Is it going to be even worse, or is it going to be finding some other way of doing this stuff?
Yeah, I'm the same. Have the same feeling of as you have about it, because you know we all have a bunch of stuff that have passwords these days. And I am very grateful to the people who are really organized and tell you specifically what it is that has had a problem.
Yeah.
So that you actually know that, yes, this was this specific device that you've got to be careful about.
Right.
Or you know, this specific account in the bank they got into somehow.
Yeah, it's one thing if they just say, if they're that good, if there's that specific, that's wonderful because it decreases the anxiety and focuses it on one spot.
Yeah,
instead of just saying, here's a red flag, you've got a problem, we don't know where, we don't know how, we don't know what.
Something happened to your bank and we don't know what, but there was a big hack of like 10 million people and you're one of them.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, that doesn't really help me a whole
lot. No, it doesn't. Well, as a matter of fact, we were just talking about a YouTube video I watched that was from Veritasium, and I'm not going to try to spell it, but he's popular on YouTube. That's an understatement. And it was how it is possible to hack almost any phone.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're password protected, even if you're two-step authentication. And at one point then, do we start doing things where we just accept that as the norm? And we find other ways. This is one reason why, for instance, I just moved into a tiny house 4 months ago with lots of changes of address. And I'm finding the easiest thing to do is to go to that business or organization's door, go in and change the address there, rather than have to go into my account and do the two-step authentication and update this and update that and have to do it all online, where I might have to update the password as well. Whereas it's easier sometimes to just walk in and say, my new address is, and they write it down. And you don't have to worry about the authentication because it's you. They ask for a proof of ID, but there's a part of me that's watching this whole thing and obviously unresolved because the way I'm babbling on about it. But I wonder if we're coming back around because of the insecurity on the internet, that we're coming back around to benefiting from personal contact.
Interesting.
Where it's the higher standard is going to be person to person, which is where we were 20 years ago.
Hmm.
And if that is the case, then what's that going to do to the way businesses are run, and what's going to do to businesses in general?
Well, as we were chatting a little bit before we turned to system one for everybody else to be able to hear us. The thing that really irritates me is that I keep seeing all these notices about legal issues to protect all the systems that are being talked about and thought about and need to happen, and that the government is going to require certain kinds of those things to make it much more difficult, if not impossible, I mean, hopefully impossible, but at least much more difficult to break in on people and do whatever they're going to do when they hack in and do it. And I feel like I see that fairly often, and it's been going on for a while, and nobody's done anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of is like, everybody has this problem. I mean, the whole world has this problem.
Right.
It's a lot of people. It's a lot of companies. It's a lot of systems, etc.
And the part that gets me.
Somebody figure out that's making all this stuff how to do this and just put this security in an amazingly strong, heavy-duty way. So it just helps all of us, solves this problem.
And the thing that gets me is that we have to do that, like you say, when you're having the politicians decide it. I don't throw up my hands, but I have to admit that I have watched just enough C-SPAN coverage of congressional hearings to go, oh dear, these people who are on the congressional hearing are good at getting elected.
Yeah.
They don't know encryption. They don't know two-step authentication from one-step authentication from, you know, from anything.
Well, one of the things that is really surprising to me about it is, since we all get those messages when there's one of those super hacks and you know, everybody in some huge financial system gets the message that whole system was hacked, and yes, you no longer are secure and you have to change everything, and we've got this company that's now going to watch out and make sure that they're not doing it, and it goes on and on and on, and they're going to do that for a year or 2 years or whatever. And every time I see that, I think to myself, this must be costing these companies an awful lot of money.
Yep.
To deal with this problem.
Yep.
And how come the companies themselves don't say, it would be cheaper for us to just figure out how to fix this damn thing?
And one aspect I have on it is, which would you rather hear that the government had just done? Spent $12 billion on a new aircraft carrier. I don't know what they cost, but spend $1 billion on a new piece of military hardware, or spend $1 billion on cybersecurity?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure you'd get a whole lot of votes for cybersecurity.
Right, because where are we actually being attacked? Where are we actually being assaulted? Where are we actually having to defend? And there's still this mindset, and there is, you know, cybersecurity. There are folks that are working it. But I do not know the relative budgets, but I have a rough time believing that the cybersecurity budget is even a tenth of what we're spending on bombs and the things that deliver the bombs.
And I come back again to, the weird thing to me is, we're talking about something that affects everybody in the world.
Right.
Right. 100% of the people are affected. 100% of the companies are affected by this.
Right.
I mean, it's a way bigger issue than, as you said, a lot of things that the government's worrying about and spending bunches of money on.
So there's a bit of folklore that I'd love to track down, and I don't expect you to know the answer, but I'll put it out there in case anybody that's listening to us can. But as I understand it, as the internet became sophisticated enough to have regular email, so we're talking 40 years ago, the U.S. And this is the folklore part. The U.S. Postal Service was approached and asked if they wanted to help manage it.
Oh, interesting.
And they said no, because their business was handing across physical mail. They're delivering packages and letters. And I frequently have gone back to that and realized that, for instance, you know, Netflix has gone through a transition like that. A lot of companies went through a transition that embraced digital. Mm-hmm. If they had charged a tenth of a penny per email, then the whole spam industry has their business model wiped out.
Oh my goodness.
And imagine how much money the U.S. Postal Service would now be working with to do these sorts of things.
Yeah. And it's kind of interesting that as an idea for them about money, because they missed that one, but they did catch the one that they figured out, listen, we have all these trucks and we can deliver all those stupid little boxes that come to everybody's house. And mm-hmm. we're going to all those houses already anyways. Why don't we start doing it? And they charge a fortune for that. They make a huge amount of money because they now have taken over some pretty large percentage of the package delivery.
Mm-hmm. And they got paid for it, yeah.
You know, business, which is a similar kind of a thing. And they did that one. Of course, they already had trucks for that and people, so yeah. I guess it was easier.
But you're in the same situation I'm in, which is neither of us is anywhere near a shopping mall. Not that shopping malls are great, but as far as having things, we're far enough out, you on the East Coast and me on the West Coast, that delivery is the way to get things rather than
Yes, we are. Laura is our order person. She just loves to play with it and order stuff.
Yeah,
will show up in anywhere from, you know, a day to whenever it takes, and I'm continually fascinated how many packages we actually get for some of the weirdest things that it's hard for me to believe that it's not, it should be something that should just be easier to just pick up at the local pharmacy or right. the grocery store or something than to go through all the aggravation and ship it and whatever that costs to have all that happen. And but doesn't happen. That's all dead.
So, know? And then what we have happening in the real world, though, and it'd be interesting to hear what you have to say about this, is, you know, the lockdown that a lot of retail places have had to have, where they've locked up all their merchandise because there's so much shoplifting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and if these folks are losing business because I'm getting it from Amazon, and then they're losing business as it's walking out the door without ever kind of going past the cash register. I mean, we watch shopping malls have kind of disintegrated. Are we watching physical stores getting close to doing the same thing? I don't know.
No, I don't know either, but I think about that also, that there is a point at which nothing is going to be available anywhere.
At the same time that everything is available online.
Everywhere online. Yeah. And it's kind of interesting to think about that. What are the implications for the businesses? What are the implications for the cost factors for everybody getting that stuff delivered and the companies shipping all that stuff all of a sudden that way? Who knows, right?
By the way, along those lines, kind of tangential, but last episode we talked about Wawa.
Wawa, yes.
And Wawa is a convenience store in the Philadelphia area, right?
Yes, Wawa. There's a big Wawa pretty close to where I am. And I was really, I used to, way back when I lived in the right place, I lived right where Wawa's were started, where the guy who started Wawa was.
Yeah.
And the reason it's called Wawa's, that was the name of the Indian tribes that lived in that area. And
okay.
The name came from the tribal, was from the tribal name stuff.
Yeah.
And so everybody around where I was, it was like a bazillion Wawa's everywhere. And
so,
everybody knew Wawa because you could get your gas there everywhere, which was nice. And you could get the food stuff that they had quick and all that junk.
So the conversation that you and I had,
but I had the fun experience when I moved to where I am now and discovered that pretty close to where I am there was a pretty big Wawa, a new model one that got bigger because they added more food stuff. And then I was really impressed that the outside of the Wawa, like basically the whole outside of the Wawa, is a electric car charging station.
And the reason I was bringing this up is because, you know, we were talking about it last month in last month's episode. You can go back and listen to it again. And now there's a firm down in Texas called Buc-ee's.
Yep.
And Buc-ee's is making their transition to do the very same thing you just talked about and that we were just talking about last month.
Anybody that drives past that Wawa and you look at it and you see how many stations they have on the outside of the building, you know, where you just drive up and you plug your car in and then you can go into Wawa and buy whatever you want Wawa while it's doing its thing. And it's there's always a lot of cars there that are getting charged. And I've been trying to figure out what's the way to find out how much money Wawa makes from that process. Because I've been really fascinated looking at it, thinking, I mean, each of those cars is standing there for however long they're standing there, sucking in electricity,
right,
and getting the charging done. And Wawa's overseeing this whole thing, managing it, and that, and there must be an awful lot of money that comes ticking into their bank roll.
So the point that they made about the ones down in Texas is that the ones in Texas can be a better role model for what's going to happen with EVs than for ones that are on the more populated coasts. Mm-hmm. Because there's a history. Well, in Texas, as the guy put it out, if you're in Texas and you're going for a drive somewhere, you're not just dropping in for 5 minutes because 5 minutes later you're going to be at your destination. You've got an hour and a half to get to the next place you're going to be. And therefore, I think it's called Buc-ee's, in Texas, has this culture now of folks that they stop in there on their way and they spend 5 or 10 minutes or 15 minutes and they buy more things than they would when they're just dropping by to buy gas and go.
Yeah, sure.
So EVs now require, regardless of where you are, you know, 5, 10, 15 minutes, maybe more. And that's the business model. So the thing I'm throwing through my head, and I'd like again, this is one thing I'm curious about what you have to think about it. It seems to me that that's going to be somebody's going to be next big thing. And whether it's Wawa or Buc-ee's, or is somebody else going to come in and monopolize, truly monopolize that industry? And yeah. I don't know. To me, there's a real feel to me that this is what like Starbucks felt like at the start of Starbucks.
Well, it is an interesting issue. There keeps being bunches of more electric driven stuff. So it's not even just cars anymore that have to get charged up. And as you say, it's all over the place. So there needs to be a way to get stuff charged all over the place.
Yeah.
Quickly and easily and regularly and so forth. And it's got to be a huge market. And so...
But is Shell or Chevron or Exxon?
Yep.
I mean, they're all ignoring the potential.
Well, I thought it was really clever when Wawa did that, because they've got these big parking lots already that they had for all the, you know, the food and gas customers coming in. And so they just put these things on the side of the building right where the parking lots are. And so it was a pretty easy deal for them to put it together. I don't know what it cost, but it was pretty easy logistically to put it together, and there it is, and it just works by itself. You do it yourself. They don't even have any people doing anything.
That was one of the issues. That was one of the points that they were making, is that, you know, with a gasoline powered car, they even have the little signs, do not leave the vehicle unattended while refueling.
Yeah.
And yep. You have the exact opposite with an EV. Please come in the door. Because there's no reason for you to stand out here twiddling your thumbs, you know.
Matter of fact, we'd appreciate it if you came in here for quite a while and bought a bunch of stuff.
Even forget that you got a car. Go back out 2 or 3 hours later. That's great. Have dinner.
Yeah, as soon as your coffee cup that you first bought is empty, please come in and buy a refill.
And by the way, here's a mug. Buy the mug.
And a mug too. That wouldn't be bad, right? So anyway, so we'll see. We'll see what happens. The way the world is shifting is pretty fascinating in all of these ways. And we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, and it's a fascinating time to be watching this whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you know, because to me, it also comes back to, I'm fascinated with the idea of technology, the unintended consequences. And the one intended consequence is that artificial intelligence will make things more efficient, you know, that all this automation is all for efficiency. And I can see us just having a backlash, not necessarily a backlash against the stuff, but again, the fact that a personal interaction greatly simplifies authentication, communication, because now you're working with body language, you're not just working with text, or you're not just working with, you know, a two-dimensional picture. Hi, you're looking very two-dimensional today, you know. And does that then bring back travel? Does that then bring back socializing, you know? And there's business opportunities in there.
Well, I think that one of the things that is happening already is that there's large numbers of people that have had it with video calling and have just had it with sitting there staring at somebody on a TV screen. Mm-hmm. And that there's large numbers of people that have
Is that better? I turned off the video. Is that better?
Yeah. Well, watching you is okay.
Okay. That's good to hear.
That's all. I keep waiting for all the daters to come by past you that I heard about earlier.
Oh, so. Yeah. Well, that's, another aspect of that's, hey, but seriously, and this is on the serious side. There's an National Institute of Health. Mm-hmm. About 6 months ago released a report saying that we have an epidemic of loneliness.
I saw that too. And what's interesting, what I was going to say is what I'm talking to lots of people and dealing with them, and I am doing significantly less video calling and more things where people are saying, and the general request seems to be, what are you doing for lunch tomorrow?
Gotcha.
And everybody calls me up and wants to know about, can we meet for lunch tomorrow or the next day, sometime within the week, you know, whatever.
Right.
And I've been talking to people I've been asking people, and people say they miss talking to people. They
right.
just stand it anymore. They can't stand being locked in their house on a video call for 6 hours or 8 hours or whatever, and it's just terrible. And the issue is terrible because of staring at the screen, and the issue is terrible because, as we all know, often
my posture because I'm crouching here in front of the team.
Yes, and often the video calls don't work so well. You know, I've had a whole bunch of conversations, as probably everybody has had, with people. As soon as a call starts and one or two people can't get on the call for some technical reason, and then you go through this thing and people start sending emails to each other, can you do blah, 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 blah. And next thing you know, the conversation that comes up is about, what's wrong with these companies? They can't make this work. Every time I'm on one of these calls, it takes 20 minutes to get the call to go through.
And there was a wonderful bit of mathematics somebody passed along to me one time, which was, if you spend 6 minutes trying to resolve something at the start of a presentation, mm-hmm. and there are 10 people in the room, you just wasted an hour.
Yep.
And how many of these calls have got way more than 10 people in the room and take way more than 6 minutes just to resolve one person's technical conflict?
Yep.
There's the impression that we're more efficient, but there's an awful lot of wasted time of folks just sitting there waiting for things. And then, of course, I'm sure there's a sub-level of efficiency, though, where folks are just putting up an image of themselves and they're getting work done while the meeting goes on.
Well, that could be. That could be an interesting thing. So anyway, so So my theory about this whole thing is that there is going to be a bunch of stuff that's going to go back to people wanting to be in person, and there'll be certain kinds of things that sort of were in person and stopped being in person that will become in person again. You know, like my example of meeting somebody for lunch because it's in person rather than on the phone. And they're just going to go, and the restaurants will be really happy when that happens, right?
The other one I'm finding, which...
They'll figure out how to make nice little restaurants that are really, really nice to sit in.
And quiet. You know,
so that the restaurant becomes a preferred place to go and hang out with somebody and do business for the period of lunchtime. Yeah. And sometimes I've gone to a couple of these calls, and where it's been, the weather's been nice enough, and they have really nice outdoor seating areas. And we've sat there for 3 or 4 hours because the places are happy to have you sit there. They just have a lot of outdoor seating, and they don't care. You're buying stuff. You're getting all this food. They're happy to see you there. And they let you sit there. And I'm thinking, what a nice way. You're out there. It's nice weather. You're looking at the trees or whatever and having these nice conversations, and they're bringing you food. And
there's more food available if you want something else, a snack, because you've been there so long.
If you need anything else, they're very polite and bring you more iced tea or more coffee or whatever it is you're drinking. And they just are, it's like, how nice is this versus sitting there staring at a stupid screen?
The other trend I'm seeing, especially for local meetings, are the walk and talks. So it doesn't work for, you know, more than 2 or 3 people. But the idea of, instead of meeting for food, because for sometimes food is actually getting to be an issue with all the various dietary restrictions and whatnot, is to, we're going to walk for an hour.
Yeah.
And that is not just, oh, I'm going to call up a friend and walk for an hour. No, the scheduled time for this business meeting will be from such a time to such a time, and we're not going to be sitting while we're doing it. We're going to be walking.
I'm pleased to tell you that, as you know, we've talked about this before, I'm a huge walker.
Yeah.
And long distances, and used to do more long distance than I've been doing lately, but lots of long distance, as well as every day try and get out and do a bunch of walking and so on and so forth. And I know other people that are walkers, and I have gotten calls exactly to do what you just said, and have done that, where we come up with an agreement that let's meet here and walk.
Mm-hmm.
And so go to a park that's near us. It's a nice park that you can really walk through, or where I am is horse country area.
Yeah.
So that there's a lot of, there's a fair number of horse trails and things like that that you can walk on. And one of the guys that I do this with, he bought a little gadget for his phone, and the gadget has where every trail is,
right,
for some huge geography in the area that he and I am in. Huge geography. It has every trail. And so we've gone off, and he said, listen, I checked, and there's this trail over here. Why don't we just meet? We'll meet, and I'll pick you up, and then we'll go over here, and we'll park, and we'll go through these trails in the back. And I said, sure, fine. And I was fascinated, because I hadn't seen that before. And we stopped at a spot, and he hit the button, and the button called up his trails, and he said, see, now we just start walking, and it's going to keep giving us the trails, just like for your car, where the car does the thing.
Yeah.
He said, now I'm going to hit this other button. You're going to love this other button. So he hits this other button, and I said, okay, what's that button? He said, that's the button that remembers exactly where we parked. So after we wander around in the woods and get lost in everything, that button will bring us right back to the car. And I said, oh, I need that. And I thought to myself, I mean, you know, people can get really clever about this stuff. So, and it's been wonderful, though, because there's so many areas around where I am, you don't even have to pick something when you start out. You just go somewhere and turn this thing on, and it picks stuff, and then you go to wherever it picked, and there you are, you know?
Yeah. So this last weekend, I was at a film festival that happened to be here. It's the Port Townsend Film Festival, 25th anniversary, that kind of thing. But it's in downtown, so it's not exactly the same thing. But parking is a real bear. It's a bear. A pear would be something else. But it's a real bear. And because it was 4 days, I wasn't going to a hotel and wandering. They had these in disparate buildings around downtown, which encourages walking around. That's all great. Mm-hmm. But those of us who had to drive in, of course, parking is a terrible thing.
Yeah.
Because it's a tiny old town, which is very cute and very quaint and all this sort of thing. But now you have 800 more people in town. And what I realized I had to do every day was, as I parked the car, take a picture of the car parked so that when I came out, I wasn't trying to go back to where I parked the car yesterday. I could be going, oh, today I parked it over by the Bishop. Yesterday I parked it over by the Marine Center. It's little simple things that are as clearly as important sometimes as buying another app, you know, just... There's the car.
I'm with you. It can be really easy when you go to, especially you go to one of these big parking lots and there's like 10,000 cars in it, and you park and you come back from wherever you were and you look around and you realize that half the cars look exactly the same.
Right.
You know?
So
they're more
or
less the same color, they're more or less the same size, and it's like, oh my God.
So I came up with an invention.
Mine is in there somewhere.
So I came up with an invention the other day, believe it or not. And this is not going to happen. This is a fun invention. It's a chuckle factor invention. But you'd hit a button on your phone or whatever, and there would be a drone on top of your phone, on top of your car. And it would just launch the drone.
Yeah.
And that way you can distinguish one from the other. I've seen various things that involve doing that with balloons and things like that. But you have to inflate the balloon, deflate the balloon, and whatnot. And I realized that some of these drones don't have to be camera drones. If you just take it down to just being a drone, you could just have one of these. Now, of course, you have to build a garage for the thing on the car, so it's probably not going to happen and whatnot. But still, wouldn't that be a trip to walk into a parking garage and have this thing up there and maybe even come over and find you and then lead you back to your car?
Hey, why not?
Yeah, really.
Listen, you know, some of these things that we talk about when we do these talks are kinds of things that I keep thinking about. These are like the basis of great business ideas for somebody that has the resources to do some creative designing and construction and whatever else. Because they seem to be the kinds of things that large numbers of people would be interested in. Because I'm sure that there's large numbers of people that wander around in parking lots trying to figure out where their cars are.
Oh, imagine a football game. I mean, right? You know, you and I are living in places where you really should be able to remember where you put your car. Maybe you have to go help finding the trails is something else, but 50,000, 100,000 cars out in a parking lot?
Large numbers of cars. That's it.
There's got to be a market for that. And that's the thing that I love. I mean, that's why. So I'll go back and I'll pitch our own podcast right now. It's Intriguing Creativity. If you can't tell, listeners, that we're both intrigued by people being creative and coming up with ideas, this is why. It's these little ideas like, why would anybody spend $4 on a cup of coffee when you can go to Denny's and get it for 50 cents?
Yeah.
Well, there's another aspect to it. Why would you watch a movie that was made by computer rather than something that was hand-drawn by a skilled animator? Well, you got Pixar. You know, so which of these ideas sounds bizarre right now that's really going to be something? And you and I are just going to be saying, well, we thought of it, but, you know.
We thought of that.
Yeah, we didn't make anything from it, but we thought of it.
And you and I have talked about the thing with the Wawa and the car charger.
Yeah.
And everything that we should figure out some way to buy or lease space at a bunch of those kinds of places, which are all over the place.
Right.
Not as Wawa's necessarily, but other kinds of buildings that are more or less the same size and are more or less being used for the same kinds of functions.
Yeah.
Have lots of empty space and lots of parking area. And what else could you do with those spaces? That, you know, there's buildings already there, and the parking is there, and the roads are there, and everybody knows where it is.
The traffic is there.
And usually, I was going to say, and usually there's a lot of people around those where those places are, living in the area and stuff.
So and, I have an addendum then to our idea last time, because we were talking about there's an old service station down here by me, about 2 miles away, 4 miles away. And we were talking about what we could use that building for,
mm-hmm.
and all this. Since then, the last time I was going by, I didn't realize until just then, there's a car wash in the back of it.
Oh, interesting.
So whether you use for a car wash or not, one of the businesses is washing your dog.
Oh, interesting.
And here would be, so I can, this has already got the plumbing, it's already got the drainage, and to be able to wash your dog outside,
mm-hmm.
in one of those bays. I mean, there's all these, we don't necessarily need new. It goes back to the whole idea of reuse. And there's some phenomenal infrastructure out there that really is just waiting for somebody to turn it into something useful.
And that's kind of got the same issue as other things. It's got roads that go to it. It's already got the utilities that it needs with water and whatnot. It's got space to park your cars. And all you got to do is build a little bit of shed or something to what the dog can go under while they're getting washed.
Well, and see, that's the thing. The way these car washes are, these are the ones where you maybe this is just too far out of modern life, but these are the kind where you put a bunch of quarters in the thing and there's a hose.
Yeah.
It wasn't like you were driving the car through anything. It was just
you could wash your dog with the hose, I guess.
And how many dogs are having to be managed as they go into a dog wash part, a dog wash office, because some of them are brick and mortar buildings out here.
Yeah.
Where if the dog likes being outside, you're still covered. You're still, you know, still, it's a brick building. It's still surrounding you, but they could drive cars in and out. You could take your Doberman Pinscher. You could take your Great Dane and have not having to worry about the interaction with the other dogs.
A lot of dogs love going in the water. So the people can take their dogs there. They don't even have to wash them. Can take their dogs there and let them run around in the water a little bit with them. And the dog would get a little vacation.
A Newfie, you know? Would have a blast. That is true.
They really like it.
Yeah.
Dogs like it. And my sister has a really big dog. Really big dog, and it's a nice dog. Dog really likes me. Dog doesn't like a lot of people, but the dog really likes me. Dogs always like me for some reason.
It's the hair.
When people are walking around and they have dogs, often the dogs will immediately start coming to me, and people will start to say, "The dog is okay. It's really big, but it's okay." And I always say to them, "It's okay, don't worry about it. All the dogs like me. It'll just come over and I'll put my hand out and it'll lick my hand." And they go, "Oh my God," people usually run when they see this dog come and barking. And I do what I said, and the dogs always come over to me and they lick my hand, and people are like amazed. So anyway, she has a really big dog, and I spent a little time at her house and went out in the morning walking the dog with her and whatnot. What I discovered is her and her husband two or three times a week in the morning when they get up to go to work, not too far from where they are, there's a doggy daycare.
Right.
And yeah. Take the dog to this humongous doggy daycare. It's huge.
Yeah.
And so I went and it will do grooming there too. And,
yeah.
You know,
right.
As playlands for the dog. And then she said, well, you're gonna love this part of Doggy Dayland. And I went and she took me into the building. And inside the building, they have a really big swimming pool for dogs. When the dogs come to doggy daycare,
uh-huh.
have an outside area where they can all go out and run around and play and do all that kind of stuff. And then they have this pool thing. And the dogs go in and just like spend as much time as they want, walk, swimming, and chasing each other through the water. And
right. Yeah.
I just loved it. I just thought it was really cool. I was looking at it, thinking they ought to have these things for people, you know. It's a bunch of little doodads, the pool, and the you can get your hair cut, you can, you know, whatever.
It's called a spa. There's yeah, there's one I, yeah. I haven't been in downtown Seattle in 10 years, but the last time I was down there, there was a doggy daycare that was smart, and what they did was they were working into an old storefront, and rather than try to obscure the windows, they just had this one really long place where all the dogs got to be up in the front window, and they got to run back and forth, and everybody just walking on the sidewalk just could just relax without having to interact with the dogs, without having to worry about fleas or bites or things like that. And they just, it was a show for the folks are the pedestrians.
Oh, that's cool. I like that. Well, this place didn't have that. This place was
I like the
big.
Pool. The pool's a good idea.
The pool, and then had part of the building was the part where they took care of the dogs, you know,
right.
if they were grooming them or whatever other stuff they did for dogs. I don't know. But interesting stuff.
But this also ties back into something we just made a casual comment about a little earlier in the podcast, which is the epidemic of loneliness.
Yep.
And one of the correlations I haven't seen much research on is that pet ownership went up as loneliness went up.
So well, that makes sense.
And it's gotten to the point where I actually had one of my doctors who said, look, an awful lot of what you have going on in your life, your health issues, are all stress related. If I could, I would prescribe you a puppy. Which I did not fulfill that prescription. There's some
Why
reasons for that.
Why couldn't he prescribe you a puppy? Puppy could do that. All you need is a piece of paper to write it on.
That's all you need for that, yeah. She also said that I should get a Jeep, because the other thing that works for me is to be hiking and skiing and things like that. So, but I got the Jeep. I haven't got the puppy. But then again, since then, I've now moved into a tiny house.
Yeah, it's a little bit deeper.
And I know folks will have really big dogs on boats, and congratulations to all of them. And I'm the sort that if I have a dog, I want to just be able to let it out the front door and let it go run. And that takes acreage.
I'm with you. When I've had dogs, they always were outdoor dogs. I always made sure that I had a property that had big enough area that I could have the dog just outside running around.
Right. Because it is one of those things that I'm watching, though, because here I am. I'm 65 and I'm single. And I'm also tracking the news and I'm watching the things that are going on with pets and loneliness and whatnot. And there's one aspect that I can make it very personal, but the other aspect, turning around, I'm saying, okay, so where is this society going? We've got this loneliness epidemic. Now, part of it has to do with the true epidemic.
Right.
And we're also coming across where we have to authenticate ourselves, which is us, again, driving us to being back in person.
Yep.
So we have these various pressures that are trends that are not static. They are definitely trends. And are we going back to we're going forward into an era when we have a totally different way and totally different incentives and motivations for interacting with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And how many of our institutions are going to be archaic as a result, and how many are going to come back and resurge? And I don't know the answer, but that's kind of where my mindset is. When I go to, I was at a film festival, Port Townsend Film Festival, give them a plug, 800 people, and I was still lonely. And I noticed I wasn't the only one that was standing there on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fascinating to just kind of go, okay, so why aren't we just having one big party? And how many folks, when I'm looking at the folks that are sitting there on their own, how many folks are sitting there staring at their screen rather than looking at each other?
Yeah, and why aren't some of these people just wandering around and walking past somebody and saying, hey, you know, you look like you're there by yourself, I'm by myself, how'd you like to walk around here a little bit and introduce ourselves and chat a little bit?
Right.
My guess is there's some number of people that would say, oh, okay, what the hell? That would be nice to meet a new person and chat with them. And, you know, and presumably if you're something like that, you would figure that everybody who's there is from some reasonably close area, you know?
Actually, so, no, this is international. It was pretty far out there.
Oh, okay. So
but at the same time, the other thing I came across, though, was it was interesting to watch the fences go up. Whereas you got within a certain number of feet of somebody, all of a sudden, because there are people that do not feel safe.
Yeah. Now near me, there is this wonderful lady who is a spectacular winemaker. She has this big, beautiful rural property, and the big garage and associated to the garage area building is the winery part of the property. And it's a really interesting thing. And it's my long-term friend, and not too far away from her, it's my other long-term friend who has a big dairy farm. They're almost touching. And they figured out that the way to make money in dairy farming is not to raise milk and sell it to the people who the dairies that buy the milk and do the stuff that they make milk out of with it. But it's to figure out how to make really cool cheeses and sell cheese. And so the wife went out and became a fantastic cheesemaker.
Right.
And they have a huge cheese business. Lots of the fanciest restaurants for miles around. If you go in there, you'll see on the menu their cheeses are listed as being in the various dishes that the places make, and you can buy them, you know, stores set up there. And so they've got, and what they did is they set this thing up with the one place is where the wine lady always sets up her wine stuff to sell the wine stuff. And the other place is where the cheese stuff is all set up and everything. And in the middle is sort of what could be a little building if it's raining or something, because mostly it's outside, because it's a farm. They have fields and stuff.
So yeah.
Nice when it's, they have tables, you sit outside, buy stuff. But I thought of that because it's well-known place. People come from all over now, because it's been around a long time. People come from all over now, and they open it like 9 o'clock in the morning, 10 o'clock in the morning, and then they go to like 8 o'clock at night, and there's people there, you know, selling the stuff, and they have some other local agricultural people that sometimes show up and sell some of whatever it is that they're making and growing. There's an egg lady that makes has these fantastic multicolored eggs that shows up sometimes. Anyway, so a lot of people come by and buy this stuff, and they get local bands are desperate to come and play. So they have local bands that they have. A lot of good musicians in the area, so they show up. There's almost always these bands playing when you're there, really cool stuff, you know, local yeah. people. But I thought of that because of what you were saying, because what they did is they got a whole bunch of wooden, big wooden tables, you know, and chairs around them. And they put these big wooden tables just out in the field there around where the food stuff and the wine stuff people are and all that. And again, it's a big area because it's a farm, so they could right. spread stuff around.
Right.
And what happens is people come from all over. A lot of people are local people because it's a rural area, so a lot of people know people in the area. So I know a lot of people in the area.
Right.
And as an example, so you get two kinds of crowds. There's the crowd of people that show up and they wander around and they find the other people that they know for years sometimes. And then they just visit and chat and sit down at these tables and buy some wine and buy some cheese and whatever else they meets their fancy. But then you've got the whole collection and listen to the music, of course. But then they've got the whole collection of people that often come a pretty long distance because it's such a famous place and the cheeses are so famous and right. the wine is so famous. And so they come a long distance and they do what I said maybe people do at the event that you were at, the thing, is the people that are just coming in, they just sit down at these big tables with the other people and they introduce themselves. And yeah. so there's always random people meeting each other there. It never fails because people just feel like it's a nice community here. Look what's going on. They've got this music playing. We can sit down here. I can get some wine. I can get some cheese. Oh, look at all these other people. They're just sitting around too. Let me find out what's going on.
And some of them have had a lot of wine, so we can talk to them easy.
Well, that too. They just start talking to each other. And then sometimes they introduce you to somebody that they knew over there, right?
Right. Hey.
So it's quite a meeting place, and it's gotten quite famous. And both of them have won lots of big international awards for their products. I mean, when I say they're good at what they do, they're
yeah.
really
oh, yeah.
good at what
Understand.
They do.
Yeah.
And so it's a wonderful place to go and hang out. So your movie theater could place, if they were clever, they could set that up a little bit. And they could turn that into something like that, and they could have stuff that they sold there too.
Well, actually, to give it the full description, Port Townsend Film Festival is a yearly thing, and it is centered around the Rose Theater. And the Rose Theater is I don't know if it's 100 years old, but it is still upholstered seats and things like that. And one room, one of the theaters is just couches and things like that.
Fancier in terms of...
Oh, it's definitely fancier. It's also yeah. the only show in town. But they take one block and they block it off.
Mm-hmm.
And they do nothing but put in tables and chairs outdoors.
Oh, so they're doing the same thing. Yeah.
Right. And of course, the big event for them every evening is they have rows upon rows of benches, just simple wooden benches.
Yeah.
And then they show like... The last night was Muppet Movie, and one of the other nights was evidently the previous year they've shown like Groundhog Day, and they'll have a big inflatable movie screen outside. So it's a heck of a thing. Now, of course, being who I am, that meant that every night I skipped that. So here's the personal plug part, because I just finished the story for the sequel to Firewatcher. So my science fiction sequel is now done.
It's done.
It's final.
You're right. I've listened to you through the various rewrites of various parts of it.
So I missed out on a lot of the socializing, but it's because I was getting something done. Now I still have to format it and do a cover art and do all the marketing text and things like that. But that's the personal plug part of this conversation.
Good. There's a lot of people me being one that had been waiting for you to finish this sequel already.
And you see, I've been giving up these opportunities to watch the movies just so I could make you get the book by Christmas.
Good, good, because I've been telling people that the book is the new version is coming, not new version,
the sequel
is coming out, rather. And some people that have read it have said, yeah, it's about time. I mean, that's what everybody says, of course, that knows you and has read a copy of it.
I'm working it. Oh, and by the way, for folks who are really curious, especially writers who are curious, I've got another blog, which is called tomthewriter.com. So I've chronicled the process of, anything I'm doing with my writing career, but that includes the so far 8 drafts that this book has gone through. Anyway, sir, we have come up over an hour at this point.
Over an hour.
And
so...
Google, despite Google's notification, they haven't cut us off, but we should probably still exit gracefully. Anything else you want to say?
Oh, I had one last thing I was going to mention to people. Do we have a couple minutes?
Hey, we'll see if Google guillotines us.
I just happened to see this book, and it looked really interesting, and I picked it up and I started reading it. It's called Extreme Ownership.
Okay.
Very simple title, Extreme Ownership. And it's written by 2 very famous high-level Navy SEALs that have retired since then, but for many years, they were the two main guys that taught all the SEALs how to be the leaders of all the other SEALs and how to lead battles and fighting and all that kind of stuff. And and when they decided to stop being military people, the two of them, they wrote this book and they started a business, and their business is they now train business leaders and anybody else that happens to need leadership training. They come to your business, or they have things you can come to, mm-hmm. and how to be the best leaders mm-hmm. there are. And they train you using exactly the same training that they used with the SEALs, so that people really are given heavy duty, in depth, how to be a leader and how to guide other people properly, and et cetera, et cetera. It's a fantastic book. They're great writers, and it's really well written, as I said. And I'm offering it. I thought I would mention it because it occurred to me that lots of people that get this and this sound thing that we send out. lots of people that get this and have told us interesting things about liking it and so on and so forth. Thank you very much to all those people. Have interesting things that they do and we've heard about and so forth. And it occurred to me that there's a bunch of you that might really be doing things where a fantastic book like this really walking you through what does it really mean to be a leader, and how do they train the SEALs to be the leaders that can lead major battles as well as large groups of people and make that whole thing work for everybody. And so the title is pretty easy, Extreme Leadership. And what that's called that because what they do is they call what they do teaching people extreme leadership.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool. The most extreme leadership way you can be, according to them, to really be the leader and be a good leader and so forth. So, I don't remember exactly where I bought it. I saw it somewhere and just bought it. So my guess is you can buy it in any of the places that sell. You know, you can get books sent to you from them. And the title's so easy, I'll just mention it once more, Extreme Leadership.
Nicely done. Well, sir, so, are we done for the week?
If any of you that get it, have fun, enjoy it, get to be a better leader. And as always, we're always happy to get comments and stuff. So if somebody gets it and really feels driven to let us know what they think, you know, always happy to hear comments from other people and advice and stuff like that.
Well, that's, sir, very good. Anything else? We done?
That's it for today.
Okay, and this has been Tom Trimbath and
Steve Smolinski
doing Intriguing Creativity, and this is actually episode 9, so we're coming up on more than a year, more than a half a year so far.
Yeah, we keep moving along here, and for those of you that have listened to us through the whole cycle, you know, this is episode 9, but you probably remember that at the beginning we had one or two that we did that we decided weren't very good. So we actually had one or two more that we did that we never showed anybody, because when we were figuring out how to do this, we had a little bit of learning days we needed to get through to get it right.
It's almost like we're human.
Almost like we're human, right.
And with that, sir, we'll cut it off, okay?
Yes, and thank you for listening. Thank you for telling your friends and sending your friends off to hear us. And as I said a minute ago, we're always happy to hear from you. Send us comments, send us thoughts, send us suggestions, send us ideas, whatever.
And with that, next time.